Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the first SAIS Distinguished Lecture of 2022. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce our speaker today, Dr. Julio Ibarra. He's a research professor in the Knight Foundation School of Computer Science in the College of Engineering and Computing, and is the Assistant Vice President for Technology Augmented Research in the Division of IT at Florida International University. Dr. Ibarra is responsible for furthering the mission of the Center for Internet Augmented Research and Assessment, or SIERA, to contribute to the pace and the quality of research at FIU through the applications of advanced cyber infrastructure. Under his leadership and stewardship, NSF has funded the AMPATH International Exchange Point and America's LightPaths AmLight Network in its portfolio of international science infrastructure. Both of these projects have been tremendously impactful. AMPATH provides its international research and education network connectors with access to US production experimental backbone networks such as Internet2 and ESNet to facilitate international science research and education collaborations. AmLight is an international network backbone and interconnects the research and education networks in the US with peer networks in Latin America, the Caribbean, and Africa. Dr. Ibarra's research interests include software-defined networks, autonomic network architectures, network automation, and network control and management. So without delaying any further, let me turn it over to Dr. Ibarra. Over to you, Julio.
Thank you, Manish. Thank you for having me and for the opportunity to present at the NSF Distinguished Lecture Series. The topic of my talk is the AmLight Express and Protect network. And AmLight Express and Protect operates as an international production network and platform for network innovation, supporting research and education. And as you see here, my introductory slide here, I am the principal investigator for the AmLight project. This is the outline of my talk, and my objective is for you to gain an understanding of first what AmLight is as a production research and education network, how we're using AmLight resources for network innovation, and how AmLight is responding to challenges from science applications. I'll start by giving an introduction to the home of AmLight at FIU, followed by some history about AmLight. So AmLight is managed from the Center for Internet Augmented Research and Assessment, SIERA, in the Division of IT at FIU, as Manish mentioned. SIERA is an interdisciplinary center. It supports and conducts research and education through the application of advanced cyber infrastructure. SIERA consists of a small group of networks engineers, software developers, and a support team. To the right of my slide, you can see a recent photo of the SIERA team. Some of the goals of SIERA are to bridge technology gaps between researchers and IT practitioners. So one of my roles is to leverage the expertise in the Division of IT and the College of Engineering and Computing to better inform our community about AmLight and the projects at SIERA. Another goal is to invigorate scholarship for undergraduate and graduate students. Engaging students to participate in projects is one of our core activities at SIERA. In 2021, 19 students participated in projects at SIERA. Finally, SIERA aligns with FIU's goals as a public research university, contributing to its research, scholarship, and technology development. Some history about AmLight. AmLight was established in 2010 under an IRNC award from the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure. AmLight consists of a 20-year build-out that includes connections to research and education in Latin America. FIU led the effort to link the U.S. research and education networks to Latin America in collaboration with Internet2, Global Crossing, and industry collaborators. This collaboration resulted in the creation of AMPATH as an international exchange point in Miami back in 2000. AmLite built upon the accomplishments of the project we call Red Lila. It's an IRNC award that was made to FIU and Scenic that preceded AmLite, also part of the IRNC portfolio. AmLite was one of the first to use optical spectrum combined with lease capacity on its backbone. Long-term leases on optical spectrum was a key accomplishment. We have these leases until 2032. They provide value to US science facilities in Chile, South America, and potentially Antarctica. AmLite was one of the first to deploy and operate its production network with software-defined networking since 2014. SDN enabled dynamic service provisioning and has significantly increased operations efficiency. We also established a committee called the South American Astronomy Coordination Committee, or the SAC. SAC provides a venue for the exchange of information and coordination between the US astronomy projects in Chile and the AmLite network operators. SAC is now in its 11th year. We had a SAC meeting in 2021. We hosted 61 participants. Each year that number appears to be growing with more interest in the work with astronomy in South America and also branching out to Africa. The 2021 SAC report is available at the AmLite project website. Some key factors that have enabled AmLite's success. First, support from NSF, the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure, and the IRNC program. The IRNC program has been critical to the success of AmLite. Support from FIU. FIU has encouraged our participation in NSF programs such as the IRNC. And our partnerships with research and education networks in Latin America, the Caribbean, and Africa have been key to AmLite's success. They have been built upon layers of trust over time. For example, sharing operations resources, such as network bandwidth, co-location facilities, network and compute resources, the sharing of human resources. I can emphatically say that AmLite's accomplishments rest upon its people. Collaboration and cooperation among some of the most talented network engineers in the global R&D community participate in the AmLite project. Next, let's take a look at AmLite as it is today. AmLite operates as an international production research and education network. This is the AmLite production network operating today. The network map shows AmLite's footprint in the US, Latin America, and Africa. The AmLite ring, shown in green, consists of multiple 200 gigabit segments, from Boca Raton to São Paulo, Boca Raton to Fortaleza, São Paulo to Fortaleza, Boca Raton to Cape Town, and Santiago to Porto Alegre. The AmLite ring, the protect ring in red, carries primary traffic as well as serves to protect the express network. It consists of the following city pairs: Miami, Fortaleza, Fortaleza, São Paulo, São Paulo, Santiago, Santiago, Panama, Panama, San Juan, and San Juan back to Miami. That's the red ring you see here. In aggregate, we have 600 gigabits of capacity to the US. We also have a presence at open exchange points in Miami, Fortaleza, São Paulo, Santiago, and Cape Town. This map here represents what AmLite envisions for the next 5 years in the current IRNC award. The goal of this planned network infrastructure is to increase capacity and resiliency. It's a very busy slide, busy diagram showing the complexity of the AmLite network. My reasons for showing it are, first, the number of network segments and facilities operated by AmLite and its partners. You see there in all of these solid and dashed and dotted lines. AmLite operates segments shown in three colors. You can see here in this legend above. All the other colors are network segments operated by AmLite partners. This is one of the successes of the IRNC program, is attracting participation among all the networks in many different countries to exchange and link to the US for support of research and education. The logos on the right identify all of our partners in AmLite. The ellipses, as you see here, represent data centers or submarine cable landings. The clouds represent external collaborators such as Internet 2 and ESnet. Lines represent network connections between facilities, these solid lines here. The solid lines represent active connections as well. Dashed lines represent connections, and dotted lines represent goals for the next 4 years. The blue rectangles represent cities, for example, São Paulo, Fortaleza, Brazil, Santiago, Chile. And the light green rectangle above represents the AmPath open exchange point facilities in Florida and Georgia. Planned increases in bandwidth capacity are AmLite is adding 200 gigabits of capacity from São Paulo to Boca Raton. It's shown in this green dashed line here. That's scheduled to be complete and operating by 2023. And RMP is adding 200 gigabits of capacity from Fortaleza to São Paulo. That's this this blue dashed line that you see here. So all of this is increasing the capacity within the region on the AmLite network, with our partners contributing to the capacity. So by 2023, AmLite is scheduled to have 800 gigabits of upstream aggregate capacity between the US and South America. Up to this point, I've presented the AmLite network infrastructure, its links, aggregation points, and bandwidth capacity as it is today, and the enhancements plan to increase capacity and resiliency. Next, I will introduce in-band network telemetry, referred to as INT. It's a technology that is currently in production service, but we also consider it one of AmLite's most significant innovations. So I'll start by describing the challenge and reasons for INT. So isolating and detecting faults of data transfers in long-haul networks with high latency, such as the AmLite network, is complex and time-consuming. It's both a technical challenge and a social challenge, because isolating and detecting faults is constrained by lack of visibility. And oftentimes it's not just the technology that's needed, but also the support and collaboration with peer networks, which sometimes is not easy when they have policies to not expose all the necessary data from their networks. As a result, detecting what events cause performance degradation often result in questions that have incomplete answers. For example, we don't really know where there is a packet loss and why it's happening, or which path the packet took, or how much time a packet queued at each switch. Effectively, there's a lack of tools that provide enough visibility to detect faults. This slide shows network monitoring pain points when attempting to detect network transient events. Common network monitoring tools fail to detect network transient events. Tools we've used for years are just too limited. Network transient events are short-term and sporadic degradations in network performance. They're caused by conditions that can lead to failures over time. For example, attenuation on an optical channel. They often go undetected, such as microbursts. So what causes a microburst? A data transfer that's so short in time, in the time domain that tools cannot detect it. It can be malicious or not. but it's not easy to detect. The time scale can be as low as 100 milliseconds to hundreds of microseconds. They can have a high impact, causing packet loss and long-haul networks with latency such as AmLite. So what is AmLite's solution to this condition and challenge with monitoring and limitations with tools? In-band network telemetry. I believe we are creating new methods to see deeper into the phenomena in our networks. Similar to the instruments astronomers and high energy physicists create to see deeper into phenomena, INT is a new method by which to instrument the network for more granular visibility. This slide describes what INT is and what it does. So INT records network telemetry information in the packet while the packet traverses a path between two points in the network. What is network telemetry information? Basically, it's a snapshot of the state of the network provided as metadata. Telemetry reports are exported directly from the data plane with no impact to the control plane. This is very important because typically there's with our traditional monitoring tools, the CPU can be severely impacted, and oftentimes resources have to be dedicated for the function. INT tracks, can track, monitor, and evaluate every single packet at line rate and in real time. And this is unprecedented. Some examples of network telemetry information collected are timestamp, ingress port, egress port, queue buffer utilization, and many others. As a result, visibility on the network is unprecedented. The telemetry data is available to detect throughput issues due to bottlenecks, failures, or configuration errors. So how does INT work? This is an example of a network instrumented with INT. The diagram here on the right shows you the source node on the left and a sync node on the right. And the network is a 5 switches with INT enabled in these switches. So the source node at the left of the diagram sends a packet, and the source node is unaware INT is enabled in the network. It doesn't need to know this information. And this is illustrated here with the number 1 in the path. The job of the INT source switch, this first one here, is to push an INT header and metadata into the packet. That's the first telemetry header here. Every INT switch in the network path then pushes its metadata into the packet, shown here at number 3. You see all of these headers being put in here with telemetry information in there. Note the stacking of the INT metadata. If a switch is not an INT switch, it just ignores the INT content in the packet. The INT sync switch, this one here at the end of the network path, its job is to extract the telemetry information, then to forward the original packet to the sync node, which is here. The same INT sync switch then forwards telemetry, the telemetry report to the telemetry collector. All of these headers and metadata here form the telemetry report. It's all collected and forwarded to the telemetry collector here on this computer. The telemetry collector then receives, parses, processes, and generates operational telemetry reports. And there you have the ABCs of INT, how it simply works. It's not that complicated. So here's a representation of a telemetry report with metadata and its data. So you can see here, all of these variables are metadata identifiers on a per switch level, and these are the metadata on a telemetry port level. This here is an example of what the metadata variable is, such as outtime, in time, per switch. You have switch 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 as illustrated in the previous slide. And all of this data is now available for us to be able to understand what is going on in the network, capturing events per packet. Now, this next set of slides provide examples of how we're using the metadata and the granular visibility provided AmLite has with INT. So interface utilization measured in the switch per packet. This is from ingress to egress all the way through the switch. It's useful for detecting microbursts, and I'll get to more detail about that. But as we defined microbursts earlier, these are bursts that occur within a very short time domain that are very difficult to detect unless you have deep visibility. You can see the start and the end of the microbursts here in this graph. The spikes over 40 gigabits per second are classified as microbursts. These are the bursts here, these five. The spikes below 20 gigabits are classified as normal traffic. These are the ones shown here below the 20 gigabit line in green and some in orange. The telemetry allows us to monitor bandwidth per interface and queue. So this gives us the ability to see exactly what's going on within the switch and how long that packet is in there. Instantaneous egress interface buffer utilization. We're now able to measure buffer utilization per port of every switch, which is something we've never been able to do before. We're using this metadata to evaluate QoS policies and to detect sources of packet drops. Note the difference in the vertical scale between the normal buffer utilization and under congestion. The graph on the left, the vertical scale here is in kilobytes versus on the right, that's in megabytes. So you can see just the difference in scale between when buffers are operating at normal levels of utilization versus under congestion. So what are the thresholds for normal and under congestion buffers? We found that anything above 200 kilobytes becomes a problem that leads to congestion. This next metadata allows us to monitor per hop per packet forwarding delay. It's useful for finding sources of jitter along the path. Jitter refers to variation in packet delay. The graph on the left shows normal buffer utilization. The graph on the right shows congested buffers. The vertical axis represents delay that you see here. Note that under normal buffer utilization, delay was measured in microseconds. I don't know if you can see that clearly, but this scale here is in microseconds. Under congested buffers, the delay was measured in milliseconds. That's here on the right graph. And you can see here some of the spikes that were generated. Like for example, this burst here occurred and you had the buffers congested reflecting that at about 65 milliseconds. So to put things in perspective, consider the degree of delay in the right graph here. Some packets were buffered for, like I said, approximately 65 milliseconds. That's about how long a packet takes to transit from São Paulo to Atlanta. Just to give you an idea of how long under congestion conditions, these buffers end up being delayed within queues. To sum up, this is a use case of an experiment we did to compare INT and SNMP reproducing an event of microbursts on a 100 gigabit link. The experiment transmits five bursts of 40 to 50 gigabits of traffic for 5 seconds. The top graph represents an INT switch exporting metadata in real time per packet. The INT graph shows five spikes. lasting 5 seconds, each generating 38 to 50 gigabits per second of traffic. And these spikes are classified as microbursts. The bottom graph represents an Ethernet switch. It's polling with SNMP at its maximum rate of every 15 seconds. The SNMP graph shows two spikes lasting 30 plus seconds with peaks of utilization of 13 gigabits per second. They are not reported as microbursts, given that they're within a 15 second timescale. So this clearly shows that the INT graph is a more realistic representation of network events. And an important finding, though, is that a legacy protocol such as SNMP is not enough to characterize the microbursts and to determine their impact. From another perspective, SNMP reported that utilization of the 100 gigabit link was at most 13 gigabits per second, giving a false impression there's more available bandwidth than there really is. So if you're using SNMP, other tools will be needed in addition to accurately characterize events. Legacy protocols are just not going to be sufficient to do this. As a result, observing microbursts becomes straightforward when your monitoring instrument provides full visibility of network events, such as INT. So let's review what was previously presented. We covered reasons why Amlite was an early adopter of INT, how INT works, what INT metadata uses for deeper visibility into the network to improve operations and support its R&E communities, comparison of INT and SNMP for measuring microbursts. In this next section, I'll present how Amlite operates as a platform for network innovation, alongside operating as a production research and education network. This slide represents a snapshot of the Amlite SDN architecture. SDN has been essential to foster innovation on Amlite. The blue boxes represent southbound interfaces. The southbound interfaces introduce an abstraction between the traditional forwarding and control planes. The yellow boxes represents the Qitos SDN platform. Qitos performs the function of the control plane. It's responsible for interfacing all network applications and southbound protocols. The green boxes represent Qitos micro applications. A Qitos micro application performs a specific task for the control plane. Green, yellow, and blue collectively form the control plane. The pink layer represents higher layer applications to support business services such as routing, troubleshooting, provisioning, et cetera. And the ellipses you see there at the top are applications or interfaces for users to make service requests. For example, the Ethernet virtual circuit manager, the EVC manager you see here in this ellipse, leverages multiple applications from the pink layer, which then call upon the green layer for specific operations with the control plane. The red box is what we refer to as the optical and packet telemetry collector over here on the right. It collects streaming telemetry from multiple sources, including the optical layer. The job of the OPTC is to detect network events at the optical and packet layers that could result in failures. The purple box is the Behavior Anomaly and Performance Manager, BAPM. BAPM interprets network state updates in network telemetry reports from the OPTC and other sources. The BAPM applies learning algorithms, searches for specific patterns, then notifies the SDN controller when nonconformity is detected. And by nonconformity, I mean not compliance or out of range with policies that have been already programmed into the resources of the network. So this is how we're able to use INT to detect if things are operating normally or not normally. BAPM leverages network telemetry to learn the current state of the network and then respond if network anomalies are potentially impacting science applications. The OPTC and the BAPM form the management plane of the architecture. This slide shows how we're applying the architecture to the INT infrastructure that AmLight is deploying at each of its sites. You can see here in this figure, the at each AmLight site, for Chile, for example, the US and Brazil, INT switches generate telemetry reports here in the data plane. A telemetry collector to process telemetry reports is also part of each site, and applications and a database to interpret and display telemetry reports is also part of the infrastructure. So what this figure here shows is that every packet becomes a telemetry report, and each telemetry collector can parse up to 2 million packets per second of telemetry reports. And this is unprecedented because before INT, network devices and network management tools could not process telemetry reports on a per packet level. And we're doing this on each one of these sites, which are at exchange points, to be able to track every single packet as it goes through every INT switch in the network. Our goal is for AmLight to be fully instrumented with INT by the second quarter of 2022. So to look at where we are at this point, we've covered the AmLight SDN architecture. I described the optical and packet telemetry collector and the behavior anomaly and performance manager as innovations leveraging network telemetry, and described the deployment to instrument the AmLight network. The next innovation to present is a subset of autonomic networking that we refer to as closed loop orchestration. So let me take a moment here for a brief review of autonomic networking. So autonomic networking, autonomic systems were first described in 2001. There's a paper by Kephart and Chess in 2003 on autonomic computing that describes the concepts and what they mean. They were used by IBM for many of their systems. So autonomic computing is not a new idea. Autonomic networking adopted many of those concepts, and they have been documented in the IET, by the IETF in RFC documents, such as 7575, as well as other RFCs. The fundamental goal with autonomic networking and autonomic systems is self-management. It's comprised of several self-star properties. One of its goals is to reduce dependencies on human administrators or centralized management systems, and to adapt to a changing environment. The other important characteristic about autonomic networking is a closed loop control. This is a mechanism for self-management functions that includes typically collecting, analyzing, deciding, and acting on an acting process. And it does this in a forever loop. And so we refer to this closed loop control as closed loop orchestration. So why is AmLight developing autonomic functions into its production operation? One reason is to increase operations efficiency by reducing dependency on NOC operators and central management systems. But an even bigger reason is a technology pull that's coming from science applications. with a requirement for SLA grade network resilience. And I have an example coming up to explain what I mean. But first, let's look at where we are today with autonomic networking and what we call closed loop orchestration. So this table represents categories of self-management as a continuum. Towards the left side are categories with more human dependency. The right side describes categories with less human dependency. User input towards the left requires more prescriptive information. As we move to the right, user inputs consist of responding to conditions and triggers and responding to user policies as opposed to prescriptive information. AmLite has evolved from the left to the right since its adoption of software-defined networking. And AmLite is currently around the middle of closed-loop orchestration around here. And so with our current project, we want to get as close to autonomic as possible. For example, having autonomic provisioning and operation of layer two VPNs is a goal for the current project. Layer two VPN is a very common service that research and education networks provide. So our goal is to move more services towards autonomic over time. This slide here represents a use case to self-optimize the AmLite network. A reason for self-optimizing is to respond to network transient events in near real time. If you recall, these transient events occur in a very short time scale. So we have to be able to do this as close to real time as possible. Today, optimization is a manual and iterative process. The diagram shows three sites in the AmLite domain. We have Florida, Chile, and Brazil. This is representative of the slide that I showed earlier of where we will have the AmLite SDN infrastructure and telemetry infrastructure deployed. The data plane in green that you see here exports INT reports to the telemetry collector, represented here in blue. In turn, the telemetry collectors export telemetry summaries to the learning systems, which includes the Behavior, Anomaly, and Performance Manager, the BAPM. When nonconformity is detected, the learning systems will send alarms to the NOC, where we have human intervention if necessary, as well as to the SDN orchestrator, where there's less dependency on human intervention. And the SDN orchestrator sends instruction then to the control plane, which are shown here in red segments to program the data plane if the controls are there to allow that. So all of that is under operator control. It's not like it's something that the network will now be self-driven. There's always a way to have operators first determine if it's necessary to intervene or to allow for self-driving of the network. So this is representative of the closed loop orchestration system. So essentially, just to recap, we're going from the bottom up here into the learning systems with telemetry summaries. The interpretation occurs here, and actions then ensue to be able to do this in a closed loop fashion. Now, this is the approach that we're taking for self-optimization, to be able to respond to the networking events in real time. So the roadmap to self-optimizing shows the improvements planned as autonomic functions and learning algorithms are improved. So today we're working around 5 seconds. By year three, we plan to improve to 2, year 4 to 1, and in year 5 to 500 milliseconds. So we've covered autonomic networking, and now we've also compared closed loop orchestration with automatic, automation, and autonomic, and presented a use case to self-optimize AmLite that applies autonomic functions and closed loop orchestration. Next, let's take a look at how we are applying these innovations on AmLite as a production network to support science. Let's start with a service level agreement, SLA agreement driven use case, the Vera Rubin Observatory. Vera Rubin is a large aperture, wide field, ground-based optical telescope under construction in northern Chile. It's an 8.4 meter telescope. It will take a picture of the southern sky every 27 seconds and will produce a 30 gigabyte data set every 27 seconds. Each data set must be transferred to the US data facility at SLAC in Menlo Park, California, within 5 seconds inside that 27 second transfer window. So AmLite has, along with all the networks participating in this Vera Rubin network, we have 5 seconds to get the data set from northern Chile here in a town called La Serena, where the base station is, all the way to SLAC in Menlo Park, California. Some of the challenges that we are facing here with this use case is the high propagation delay in the end-to-end path. The round trip time from the base station in La Serena, Chile, to the US data facility at SLAC is approximately 180 plus milliseconds. We've computed that a 0.001% packet loss will compromise the Rubin Observatory application. So this is very, very, very time sensitive. So this slide represents the Vera Rubin workflow cadence. And we're trying to represent here the what happens in the 27 seconds that I described in the previous slide. So the 27 seconds is for data, is for the data set transfer window. 22 seconds is to gather and process the image shown here in white. And 5 seconds for the transfer to the US data facility shown in blue over here, okay? At least 40 gigabits per second of dedicated bandwidth is the estimated level to achieve the data set transfer within 5 seconds. So what if a condition occurs that results in packet loss shown here at this point? The network must react within 22 seconds of the next data set process window in order to not miss the data transfer window. Without proper instrumentation, because of the complexity in troubleshooting, a distributed multi-domain network topology, such as Vera Rubin's, is likely, this condition is likely to impact the following data transfer window. And that's shown here with this red square and this X. And the following ones too, that you see here. So depending on the type of issue, for example, soft issues such as a packet loss, it can take hours, days, and possibly weeks to mitigate this problem. Unlike a hard issue such as a fiber cut, it could take quite a bit of time with packet loss. As I've covered previously, it's hard to know where it's happening in a short amount of time. So it looks like the Vera Rubin Observatory needs a network that's properly instrumented and can respond to transient events in real time. So let's take a look. AmLite is instrumented for SLA grade network resilience for the Vera Rubin Observatory. The Express and Protect paths are instrumented with INT and PERS sonar from Santiago, Chile to Atlanta, Georgia, where AmLite will hand off to the ESNet network. So you can see here, all of this instrumentation is in place from Chile all the way to Georgia. We have the INT switches. We have dual connectivity here with the primary express path and the protect path. And we have our closed loop orchestration here with the INT collector per site. So instrumented with INT, AmLite's management plane is processing telemetry reports, isolating and detecting traffic anomalies, validating performance thresholds, and computing risk profiles of optical links and IP layer metrics. So if a transient event were to occur during the dataset transfer window, packet loss might impact the transfer. The event will be detected in the INT report. So we may lose one image transfer window. The instructions will program the data plane to provision an alternate path before the next data transfer window is set. The closed loop orchestration repeats this process for every packet as it traverses the network. So we're able to have the detection mechanism in place to be able to not miss the next window. So AmLite should not miss the next data set transfer window as a result of the instrumentation that's in place. So finally, our metric for success is to not miss that data transfer window. And this is what we're instrumenting the network to be able to achieve for Vera Rubin, as well as four other SLA-driven applications. AmLite also supports Fabric. AmLite will be providing a dedicated optical path between the Fabric node at FIU and the Atlanta core node. FIU will be hosting one. We're expecting it to arrive within the next few months. We will have multiple 100 gigabit stitching points to these Fabric nodes. In Atlanta, stitching points to ESNet and Internet 2, as well as AmPath in Miami. We have, this will be available in Miami as well as in other locations that you see in the footprint in, or you saw in the footprint in South America, and even in Cape Town. And up to 50 gigabits per second of available bandwidth capacity over AmLite links during experiments to support the goal for reproducibility on Fabric. Experiments will have access to per packet telemetry in real time as well. This is a network diagram to show the network as planned for Fabric. You see the Fabric edge node at FIU here and the Fabric core node in Atlanta. There's multiple 100 gigabit path between the Fabric node at FIU and the core node in Atlanta that leverages the infrastructure that's in place. Compute and storage devices, services at open exchange points will be available at AmPath and these exchange points here. These exchange points will be operating as software-defined exchanges, the blue rectangles. They will support closed-loop orchestration per exchange point and across multiple network domains. So the main takeaway is to note that the AmLite backbone is instrumented with real-time in-band network telemetry that Fabric can leverage for its experiments. Other science communities supported on AmLite, the Large Hadron Collider Open Network Environment, LHC1, the Open Science Grid, Partnership to Advance Throughput Computing, the Event Horizon Telescope, ground-based telescopes in Chile and South Africa. The Event Horizon Telescope actually is an interesting story because that involves really all the projects in the RNC program, not just AmLite. So this gives you an idea of all the different communities that can benefit from the instrumentation that we will be operating on AmLite. The AmLite team is here. We have myself as principal investigator. Geronimo Bezerra is the chief network architect He leads the engineering teams and also the software development teams for all of the software that I described in this presentation. Vasilka Shergarova is our lead for outreach and education. Heidi Morgan at USC is the lead for research engagements. Chip Cox at Vanderbilt University is our coordinator for operations. Professor Luis Lopez at University of Sao Paulo and FIU, he's our chair for the research committee. And Eduardo Resendi at RMP, he is our chair for the engineering committee. And I left for the last slide, Julio in one slide description. And so I will just briefly mention or answer the question of when, how, and why did I decide to go to pursue a research career. I will give credit to much encouragement I received from a vice president at FIU many, many years ago, and also a family member. I must say that entering graduate school and then pursuing my PhD was a journey. And there was inspiration from colleagues and team members, and also motivation from my PhD professor. I will say the experience was transformational. It has really helped me to be more mindful and effective of the importance of working with research faculty and IT practitioners and the importance of them working together effectively. And I give much credit to the programs NSF has produced to enable us to do this. Some references, if you're interested in more information about the topics I covered. And thank you very much for your time and the opportunity to present this to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Julio, for an absolutely brilliant talk. Let's give a virtual round of applause to Julio. Thank you.
Thank you, Manish. So,
and it's just amazing to see the tremendous impact and broad impact your research is having, both in the networking research community, but also in the science, broader science community by the research it enables through these remote instruments. So with that, let me open it up for questions. I know there are two lined up in the Q&A box. I'll start with that. The first question is from Sally O'Connor, and she's asking, are redundancies addressed in the network? Why was Boca Raton selected instead of FIU campus?
The reason for Boca Raton is that the undersea cable system lands in Boca Raton, and there is a data center that the cable is terminated at, and it was just more effective for us to establish a point of presence there to minimize the latency for the Vera Rubin Observatory. If you recall, we have 5 seconds to get that 13 gigabyte data set to the data facility at SLAC. So by going north directly from Boca Raton, where the cable lands, we're able to keep the latency to a minimum, as opposed to coming all the way down to Miami and then going north again. And that's mainly the reason why.
Thank you. And again, reminder to everybody, please, if you have questions, please enter them in the QA box and I'll read them out. So we have another question from Jennifer Schoff. She asks, on slide 28, our experiences with other astronomy applications such as the EHT has shown that the problem with transferring the files isn't the long haul networks such as the ones you are supporting, but the network between instruments and the first exchange point. which is generally less than 1 gigabit per second network, or a controller computer with less than 1 gigabit transfer rates. How have you dealt with these high-level bottlenecks, which are more common and performance impacting than micro events?
Thank you, Jennifer, for your question. That is a reality that we have to work with. That I classify that more as a social engineering challenge than a technology challenge, because many of these instruments are just not connected at the level that they should be. And Jennifer has been leading this effort for the IRNC group. She has a very important program called EPIC that works with researchers and makes it very easy for them to understand where there are bottlenecks and what needs to be done. Network telemetry essentially is providing visibility and much needed visibility that we don't have today with traditional tools. So it doesn't solve a bottleneck problem. That has to be, that typically has a cost, and it just has to be addressed by the projects or the operators.
Thank you. Our next question is from Deep Mehdi. He says,
hey, Deep.
Great talk. How are you planning to incorporate, coordinate the need of Event Horizon Telescope Next Gen to meet their data transfer in incoming years?
Well, the Event Horizon Telescope is, as I mentioned, a social challenge because many of their sites just are not well connected for the kind of data movement that that they require. There was I think it was in 2020 that the Science Digest NSF published that the way that they are getting the data to their analysis centers essentially is via hard drives. They take the hard drives and drive them down a mountain to where they're then shipped to an analysis center. And we have been meeting with them, working with them to adopt the research and education networks as their approach instead of using physical disk drives to move their data. A number of the sites are properly connected, but quite a few others are not. And so this is part of the work that we've taken on with the SAC committee to show them what's at least available in South America that they can leverage. But this is a global instrument involving many instruments, and so each of the IRNCPIs is working to better inform these astronomers about what's available to them and for them to use these resources.
Thank you. I think Jennifer thanks you for the shout out to EPOC.
You're welcome, Jen.
Other questions for Julio?
You're all very kind.
Well, we'll wait for another minute. See if there are any further questions. I would remind that for the NSF program officers, there's a session later this afternoon. The post-lecture office hour, it's between 3 and 4. And so that's another opportunity to chat with Julio. Seeing no more questions Oh, there is one. Thank you, Sylvia. This is from Sylvia Spengler. Do you see the network as being extensible to other disciplines within South America?
Yes, absolutely. I didn't cover other disciplines as well, but yes, we definitely are working to attract more disciplines. Sylvia, thank you for your question. It's good to hear from you. Certainly, the biosciences community is one of interest, as well as ecology and geosciences. We, as a program, the IRNC PIs communities, we share a lot of experiences and try to figure out how we can get these different communities of researchers to engage with the research networks. So we have been leveraging some types of cyber infrastructure, for example, data transfer nodes that they can use to at least copy their data to these nodes and be able to move them rapidly across the network to where they are analyzed. In some cases, this has been very, very effective. The results have been very good. In other cases, it's just, like I said earlier, it's a social engineering challenge to get some of the researchers to adopt new methods and to use the research and education networks. So for sure, we are certainly interested in every opportunity to engage with the different disciplines and have them benefit from the networks that are available to them.
Thank you. Okay. Well, we have a question from Patrick Smith. Okay. By the way, Sylvia says, lovely talk.
Thank you, Sylvia.
And Patrick says, fascinating presentation. Thank you for your insights. Early in your talk, you mentioned Antarctica.
Yes.
Is FIU interested in the recent announcement by Subtel Chile for a subsea cable between Tierra del Fuego and King George Island?
Yes, absolutely. We have been pursuing and following all the activities with NSF in the IRNC program. I follow Pat Smith's presentations as much as possible, and I know he has one coming up, I think this Saturday, as part of TPRE, and we will certainly be there to enjoy your talk, Pat. But we are for sure interested in Antarctica and the opportunities for Antarctica to benefit from the research networks we have close to them. So the AmLite network is a resource that we would like to make available for the instruments in Antarctica. I believe the telemetry capability that we're instrumenting on AmLite would be beneficial for a lot of that science, and we would welcome the opportunity to show that. So, but you know, clearly this is an opportunity for the entire IRNC program and NSF to really be able to get those instruments connected to a high-speed optical network, as opposed to just using satellite communications as they are today.
Thank you. Sylvia has another question. She asks, should domains work with your science person at USC?
Yes, absolutely, for sure. Heidi Morgan is a excellent person to contact and inform them of interest for AmLite. Thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you. And we have a comment from Famida Chaudhary. She says, no question, just thanks for a great presentation.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Okay. So with that, let us then close this session. Reminder again, there is a post-lecture office hour between 3 and 4 this afternoon, where we have another opportunity to talk to Julio. Again, Julio, thank you for all your work, impactful work, and for this great presentation. And with that, I shall close this session. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you so much.